Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Hello and welcome to SCOTUScast. I'm your host, Justin Drawer, on behalf of the Faculty Division of the Federalist Society. We're here today to discuss National Pork Producers Council v. Ross, which was argued before the court on October 11th. It's my honor to introduce our guest today, Ilya Shapiro, who is a senior fellow and director of constitutional studies at the Manhattan Institute. Previously, he was executive director and senior lecturer at the Georgetown Center for the Constitution, and before that, a vice president of the Cato Institute and director of Cato's Robert A. Levy Center for Constitutional Studies. Now over to Mr. Shapiro to talk about the case.
It's good to be with you all. This was a fascinating and long argument. I want to emphasize long. It went 2 hours and 12 minutes. I mean, that's like two arguments in the before times. Nobody can complain that they didn't have their views fully entertained by the justices, I think. There were four counsel arguing. That also extended the time. I'll take those up as we go through the way argument worked. I'll put the bottom line up front. I mean, you're getting the value of my prediction is about what you paid for it, but this could be one of these left and right against the middle sort of decisions where if you're into the Dormant Commerce Clause or the National Pork Producers versus Ross case enough to be listening to this, then you know that Justices Thomas and Gorsuch are skeptical, to say the least, of the Dormant Commerce Clause. Well, in addition to them, at this argument, the other three justices most skeptical were those on the left, Kagan, Sotomayor, and Jackson. So I think California wins is my prediction. Again, worth what you're paying for it. Either five or six, maybe seven in the majority. But the strongest ones, as I said, are Gorsuch and Thomas, and then the three on the left. The strongest, probably pro-challenger, was Justice Alito. And then I think Kavanaugh and Roberts in there as well. Barrett was hard to read. So that's where my overall prediction lies. But more important than that, because again, you can't really take that to the bank, but fascinating discussion of issues. So first, Mr. Bishop, the lawyer for the pork producers, who are saying that California's law that regulates the amount of space that's to be given to breeding sows, and the argument goes, would impose substantial burdens on almost entirely out-of-state pork producers, thereby that violates the Dormant Commerce Clause. That's California regulating extraterritorially. And so Justice Thomas led off that is now the court's practice. The Justice Ginsburg was almost always the first out of the gate. Now Justice Thomas is the senior associate justice, typically goes first. And he is asking questions at most arguments, which is also a change. So he asked, when is a regulation impermissibly extraterritorial? He wanted just the basic rule that the challengers were looking for. And the answer was that when the regulation applies to out-of-state production. Throughout this would be a theme throughout the course, one of the themes throughout the course of the argument, that, for example, something like labeling or something else that is post-production is much easier to deal with. It's either de minimis or it doesn't affect having to trace back to where something, you know, the very first widget, or in this case, breeding sow, in the process lies, which is difficult to do in the pork industry because different cuts come from different states and hard to trace that way. So Justice Kagan followed that up by saying, you know, anytime a rule changes a manufacturing process, And there was this discussion of exactly the under the Pike balancing test case from 1970. Does this mean that any burden is significant? Well, and the answer is, well, there's a balance there. It depends on how strong the interest of the state that the state is asserting. And the challenger would not back down from this idea that whenever there's a state is controlling out-of-state operations, that's the important part. Justice Kagan pressed on this and said, well, what if this was Wyoming or Rhode Island passing a law? You know, presumably it's easier to just exit those markets. They're not that significant. California here, even though it's the production is negligible of pork, it is consuming something like 15% of national pork. So that's not insignificant. But what about Wyoming or Rhode Island? And the answer was, legally speaking, there would be no difference. Justice Gorsuch jumped in, and we all knew what to expect, that he would probably be ironically, or again, the case showing odd bedfellows, if you will, he'd be favoring California here, because he's asking the challengers, are you expecting us to apply a freewheeling balancing test to protect liberty? Something like Lochner. Now, I'd expect Chief Justice Roberts to invoke Lochner, the specter of Lochner, in a negative way, but not Gorsuch, who in other circumstances, at least when it comes to the positive commerce clause, is skeptical of congressional interference with economic liberty of different kinds. But regardless, here he came out of the gate with that. Before they began their opening, this was still in the freewheeling portion of the argument. Again, the new argument format is they have this, they can interrupt each other, although they're interrupting each other a lot less than they were before. But anybody can ask questions. And then after that, they go in order of seniority to see if there's any additional questions. So the last one in the free-for-all was Justice Sotomayor. And she asked, well, what about, is this really a morality regulation about animal cruelty? Or is it a health regulation? Some people believe, there's an amicus brief, that closer confinement leads to less healthful pork and disease transmission, these kinds of concerns. And the reply there, well, first of all, this is a motion to dismiss, not an evidentiary question. And it seems like California is leaning more on morality anyway. What about alternatives? This would come up, less burdensome alternative. For example, labeling. Justice Barrett brought this up. Why is labeling okay, as the challenger has conceded? And again, the answer is it doesn't affect operations. It's a post-production or marketing sort of issue. And also the another major theme of the argument came out that the challengers were saying that morals regulations can't count as a state interest, unlike health and safety. We can't have states asserting interest to regulate what's going on other or affecting other states significantly when it's on the basis of morality rather than health and safety, which of course leads to the perhaps a paradoxical conclusion that a complete ban on a product, here pork, would be okay, but a regulation of this kind that would impose costs would not be. Does not the greater include the lesser? That was a fairly nuanced argument about the nature of the regulation versus the relative burden. And if, if California thinks, that pork is bad or a particular type of product is bad, it can certainly exercise its police power in that way. But that doesn't have such a significant out of state, impact on operations. And it came out that California might have a stronger case. I think Justice Alito asked this question, if there were insignificant in-state producers, because then it would be effectively an anti-discrimination or a level playing field regulation if it subjected the in-state producers to these kinds of regulations about how you raise sows, then you want to have a level playing field, but that's not this case. Then the U.S. government, the deputy attorney, the deputy solicitor general, Ed Kneedler, and here the Biden administration is supporting the challengers again against California, one of those rare cases because it doesn't want the, quote, balkanization of the National Economic Union. Justice Thomas asked, well, wouldn't you avoid this problem by just having national legislation to the same effect? And the answer was yes. Congress can do this, but of course that doesn't answer the question because that's the whole crux of the inverse commerce clause. Congress could have this kind of agricultural regulation. It has chosen not to. What is the significance of that? Justice Alito asked, probed further this question about safety versus morality and asked about what about applying these kinds of regulations to Mexico or Canada? And the response was, well, that might implicate the Foreign Commerce Clause or violate certain treaties that the United States has. And of course, treaties being part of federal law, trump state law to the contrary. Justice Kagan asks an interesting hypothetical about pre-Civil War days before the 13th Amendment. What if a state had a regulation saying no product that's been produced by slavery can be sold in the states? Or what about a ban on horse meat? We're okay with that. Certain states ban that, but this is a lesser regulation. And this, a lot of interesting hypotheticals here. Later on, there was the Texas versus California battle. Let's say that Texas had a rule that no fruit can be sold in the state that's been handled by people who are in the country illegally. Ultimately, California's counsel conceded that that might be okay because there might be a state interest that's particular for that. California might not like that, but it would. The California Solicitor General, Michael Mongan, conceded that that was okay. How unusual is this law, and does that matter? Justice Kavanaugh, Justice Barrett asked that repeatedly. And the answer here is that it is pretty unusual because it's a moral regulation that significantly affects, has an extra significant extraterritorial effect. And moreover, if this is upheld, then that would invite further attempts to regulate other states. So if this law falls, the answer was not too many other laws would have to fall. None could be identified, perhaps. But if it's upheld, then that might invite more regulations of other states on various kinds of morals grounds. That led to an interesting discussion ultimately with the lawyer for the Humane Society. That's the fourth council. It's rare that an amicus for a non-sovereign, for not a state or the Solicitor General's office, gets to argue. But here we have the Humane Society. And an interesting part came out here from Justice Barrett, who asked what morality is, or followed up on Justice Thomas, who asked, how would you define immoral or a cognizable state interest in morality. And Justice Barrett said, let's dig deeper on that. Is it kind of a parallel to substantive due process, she said, deeply rooted in our nation's history and traditions? And the answer was, well, you have to look at the closeness of the fit of the moral interest to the regulation. But ultimately, at one point, Mr. Lampkin, the counsel for the Humane Society, said that indeed there's a difference between deeply rooted, long recognized cultural traditions and something that's new. Justice Alito said, hold on a sec. Are you really saying that old morality is okay, but new morality is not, at least if for purposes of an interest that can survive dormant commerce clause analysis? And, my view is that indeed is kind of interesting, transposing that unsatisfying substantive due process standard onto questions of federalism and this, heterodox consideration of the dormant commerce clause. Justice Kagan at one point asked whether the idea was you have an anti-leveraging principle, is the idea that as long as a state is passing laws for its own, sincere interests and isn't trying to leverage its own power to affect national change, that's okay. Justice Thomas earlier, but this kind of goes into this discussion, asked whether it matters if the extraterritorial effect is the real purpose of the legislation, or whether it's just a collateral effect. And of course, here, Prop 12 was a state referendum. So who knows what each individual voter or a plurality of them, why they wanted to require these kinds of regulations for raising livestock. Was it concerns about health, whether based in science or not, or was it a morality, animal cruelty related interest? Lots of line drawing issues here. A lot of them are very tough, as Justice Kavanaugh especially drew out with various kinds of hypotheticals. Or as Justice Alito put later on to the California's SG, what if a state says we simply don't want products produced in an immoral way? And that morality could include, you know, Oregon saying the workers don't have a certain level of health insurance, another state saying that we don't want it produced by workers who are not vaccinated. Another state, you know, the Texas example, we don't want produced by people who are in the country illegally. All sorts of different things that could be counted on as morals legislation. I'm not sure, this doesn't change my bottom line prediction that California is likely to win, but what kind of standard the justices are likely to draw is very unclear, because it does seem that none of them were satisfied with the rule of law that either side, or that any of the four sides, I suppose, was proposing. At one time, Justice Kavanaugh asked whether the California Solicitor General wants Pike and that balancing test to be overturned for some sort of clearer rule, and he said no. So I don't know. The conventional wisdom going into this argument, and I shared this, was that they were going to use this case to change the Pike standard, to have some sort of clear delineation between state laws that violated the Dormant Commerce Clause and those that didn't. This seems to be a period where the court is reconsidering a lot of precedent from the gaudy legal wallpaper of the 1970s, as I've put it elsewhere. But I don't know what the ultimate standard or rule of decision will be here. But again, it does look like there are at least five votes to uphold the California regulation, because it's neither discriminatory against other states facially, you know, a tariff style trade barrier, nor is there a way of drawing a line between a permissible and an impermissible morals regulation. The concluding, I'll end with this, and that's the final statement from the rebuttal by the challengers when asked or saying that, you know, if the challengers don't win, this would bring us back to the pre-constitutional convention picture of balkanized markets that destroys the twin purposes of the Commerce Clause, which is to maintain the national economic union and territorial sovereignty of the states. I certainly agree with that sentiment. I should have disclosed this sooner. I filed a brief at the cert stage on the Cato Institute's behalf, urging the court to take up the case and clarify the Dormant Commerce Clause. But in any event, I think I'll leave things there. Thanks very much for allowing me to entertain and maybe even enlighten you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.